All right. Hello and welcome to the Mobility Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. We have a very special episode today, right on the heels of Transportation Secretary Designate Pete Buttigieg's nomination hearing in Senate Commerce. It was a really interesting hearing and just overwhelmingly positive from, you know, a bipartisan standpoint. But I think, first of all, we have some new listeners on the pod. And so wanted to first of all, welcome everyone who's started to tune in. As you've probably clued in, this is a podcast about transportation policy in particular. But what we've been working on for the past 4 years is trying to provide explanations of what's happening in transportation policy at the federal level, as well as in new transportation technologies. So my name is Greg Rogers. I'm a public policy manager at Nuro, but I'm not representing Nuro on this podcast. And I'll let my co-hosts introduce themselves as well.
I'm Greg Rodriguez. I'm with Stantec, but also not representing Stantec on this podcast. And I do mobility policy as part of our smart mobility team.
And I'm Pete Gould. I am the founding partner at Catapult Policy Strategies. And I do public policy consulting, lobbying, and all that fun stuff in the transportation mobility world.
Awesome. And throughout this year, in particular, we're going to be looking at how the Biden administration, paired with a Democratic Congress, will work to, you know, achieve some of the goals that he outlined in his platform. And we'll be explaining policy issues along the way. In upcoming episodes, we'll have more explanations of transportation policy issues that might seem a little bit convoluted at first. And we'll be speaking with experts from nonprofits, from industry, and from government about all of these things that affect transportation places and the things that move them. So let's jump into it. Mayor Pete had his nomination hearing today, January 21st. The first thing that stood out to me really was just how much bipartisan support there was for him. The outgoing Republican chairman, Roger Wicker, gave a very warm introduction. He expressed a certainty that he'd be confirmed and said he's really grateful that Buttigieg will be willing to serve. And Senator Todd Young, a Republican from Indiana, so from Mayor Pete's home state, called him a professional friend and colleague and said he had a great deal of respect for him and was very complimentary in the introduction. I think, first of all, what is funny is for every hearing of a new transportation secretary or any sort of secretary, some folks who are watching might have noticed that a lot of folks are asking Pete to come visit their states. So maybe I'll ask other Pete, what, as a former Hill staffer, why does that happen?
Well, first off, I if I were a staffer going in with Mayor Pete, soon to be Secretary Pete, I would call dibs on the Cape Cod invite to inspect the bridges from Senator Markey, and you know, I could let some of the other colleagues take a few of the others. You know, it's a number of things. One, it's as an elected official, it's always a good sign that you are bringing the seat, you know, the main seats of power and influence and sources of funding to come to the state. You know, it shows a bit of effectiveness as an elected official. But also, you know, I don't know anyone who's on here who's been a staffer or done any of these. You really can't just read about an issue or a project the way that you can really appreciate it by seeing it. I mean, I'll give a very quick anecdote. We did when I was on TNI, you know, obviously you read about ports and how big everything is, and we move all these goods and all this stuff. Until I went to the port of LA and Long Beach, and you know, they take you out on a boat and you just see, and then they actually took us up in a helicopter. Until you see the scale and magnitude of that and the Alameda corridor, you just can't read about, you know, like seeing 10,000, like the number on paper, 10,000, you know, containerized, you know, container port, you know, coming through a port, and then seeing 10,000 containers right there is effective. And it really does help you, you know, mold their thinking and get them really tied to a thing.
That's great. And I think that's exactly right. It's very different to see, 100 boats, 100 giant boats, than to read, 100 giant boats. Very, very different impact.
Yeah.
You know, what I thought really was really interesting, about Mayor Pete, you know, as a candidate, I've talked about this in the podcast before, is that, you know, when he was mayor of South Bend, he had seemed to have a really keen interest in transportation. Back in 2016, I reported on an event that he spoke at about how he had really helped to revitalize South Bend by creating bike and pedestrian infrastructure, by slowing down speeds and arterial, and trying to encourage shopping at local businesses. I'd be interested to hear you guys' thoughts. You know, how do you think of, you know, how a mayor will sort of approach, you know, being DOT secretary, perhaps versus someone who hasn't had that sort of on the ground experience?
I mean, I think that's a really good question. I think we saw it in his opening statement where he talked about, you know, wanting to bring a bottom up perspective on transportation programs and funding. Automatically, to me, that triggers, you know, some tensions with the traditional way of doing things around state DOTs, kind of being receiver of funds and handling programmatic issues. So it'd be interesting to get other Pete's perspective on that. But and then the other, you know, picking up on a previous conversation around why to go visit. I mean, if there's any time for a new Secretary of Transportation that talks about the opportunity for generational change, is now to go across the country and get a true understanding of the challenges and opportunities we have around infrastructure. I mean, as a lot of our listeners know, we've talked about automated vehicles for years now. One of the challenges I see is we don't have the same infrastructure in every single place where automated vehicles are looking to operate. To try and figure out how to leverage this exciting opportunity we have around the future of mobility, and to try and think about how do we make sure we're addressing foundational infrastructure issues, like a number of places don't have sidewalks, and how do we get safer streets for people to be moving, but then to think about these next generation transportation solutions and how do we make sure they're able to transition to a safe operating environment, especially as we try and navigate a future with mixed use of traditional and automated vehicles and things like that.
I think we often tend to overblow the, oh, he's a mayor, so therefore this is going to be great for X, Y, and Z. Because the same way that it's like, oh, great, we just elected somebody to be our mayor, that means we're going to get great transportation policy at the city level, it matters what kind of a mayor you are and what kind of policies you push forward. What's fascinating on this one, with Mayor Pete is that he was, when he was a mayor, was pushing some of these things that, you know, advocates in smart growth and the bike community and just, you know, the kind of non-traditional or, you know, non-infrastructure road gang types have, is that, you know, with each new member of Congress, each new staffer and each new secretary and appointees, you tend to come in and trying to have to like explain them out of the kind of build more jobs, bigger highways, fix congestion mentality. And so I think it's like just really exciting that you've got someone who, you know, you don't need to go in there and talk to him about, you know, here's why it's important to have complete streets. He goes, you know, he's like, yeah, no, I get it. Not only did I sign on and do it as a mayor, but like, I also then saw the impacts, and this is a great thing. So like, that's where I think the real transformational impact of what that's going to bring to DOT means. Cause what's else funny is every single mayor will tell you that they need, you know, and you heard it a lot today, and state DOTs are the same way, that we need more money and less strings from Washington. And everyone says that until then they get to DOT and they say, if you want this money, you're going to have to start using it better. And that's what is like another way of describing strings. So it's always fascinating to see what happens once you're on the other side. It's kind of like, you know, how strong of an institutionalist and the separation of powers and asserting congressional authority everyone is until they get elected president. There's a little bit of that, I think, with the transportation funding as well.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I just want to pull out a couple of quotes I thought were really interesting from this morning. Senator Schatz from Hawaii, you know, he was talking about how, you know, departments of transportation actually end up being departments of cars. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time. And Mayor Pete said something really interesting. He said, you know, which I think, you know, transportation walks, we talk about a lot, but, you know, what Pete said was, we need to be thinking about not widening the aperture through which we're moving cars, but instead, you know, connecting people with destinations. And that's something that we discussed, you know, in our last episode with Beth Osborne from Transportation for America, I think those are really important things to think about. And just one other quote that I really enjoyed as well. You know, he also said, there are so many ways that people will get around. And often I think we've had an autocentric view that's forgotten historically about a lot of the different modes. And so he really dug in on, let's look at street designs at a federal level. How are we supporting cyclists and other modes? How are we looking at the connection between transportation and local commerce, which is especially important as we're looking at an economic recovery from a crisis that's disproportionately impacted Main Street. So I think it's really good to see that sort of attention to these issues that I feel like we that I certainly haven't seen as much of in my time in transportation policy.
Yeah. Did anyone else pick up on that there was like almost a Beth Osborne subtweet in his response when he was talking about when he came to DOT and they were doing this, and he's like, and we got some real great leadership and coordination and technical assistance from a, you know, from a staffer and group. And I was like, he's talking about Beth Osborne. So,
I mean, on the other hand, maybe just to play devil's advocate is, you know, coming up from the, you know, proposing this kind of bottom up perspective and really going at it at a granular level, you know, is that going to be seen as an impediment for being able to move quickly to change a system? I know, again, like we're talking about infrastructure week again, or infrastructure year, infrastructure 3 years, and a lot of people want to see stimulus funding. But, you know, we are dealing with a pandemic. There's a lot of competition for a need for federal dollars right now. Do we think that might slow down an infrastructure package? And is there a learning curve for Mayor Pete to get up to speed on all these programs to then be able to come up with this comprehensive vision? And maybe something like that doesn't happen until next year.
I don't think it's going to be a year. I think there's, you know, other, you know, external factors that are probably going to be more of a driving force in slowing down. You know, I guess there's the two concepts. There's the infrastructure stimulus and the, you know, as part of a climate reconciliation bill. And then there's surface transportation. I think surface transportation is, you know, you're looking, it's, you know, that's not a, let's get that in the next 2 months or 3 months. But, you know, and this, we, you know, because there was also a lot of talk here on some of the, just on a lot of these discretionary grant programs. And so just a real quick kind of 101 for those just joining us from the P train, we are, you know, there, you'll see a lot of big numbers about how much federal transportation money there is from DOT. But of that, a large, like the overwhelming majority of it is just formulas. So like literally it's X amount of money for bridges. And then you put it in the formula and it says, okay, California gets this, New York gets this, Idaho gets this, and here you go. And DOT
is predetermined.
Yeah, it's predetermined. It's written into the rules. And so DOT is literally a reimbursement. You know, it's like your HR expense accounts. As long as you show that you spent it on something that you're allowed to, they say, okay, and you get reimbursed. But there are these large discretionary, meaning that it's at it'll be at Secretary Pete's discretion which projects to pick. And I think I'm forgetting who like kind of leaned in on this, but there were a lot of questions on, you know, the importance of funding for rural projects and rural areas, and they a lot of folks really leaned in on ensuring that in those discretionary programs he is ensuring that that rural areas are getting what they need. But we're also that also can be applied to things like zero emission vehicles, infrastructure for electric vehicles, and just complete streets and smart growth or fix it first over, you know, basically telling him not to, you know, you shouldn't be using a large build slash tiger or whatever they're going to rename it and crush Finch's hopes. You shouldn't be funding big grants on that to build a extra three lanes on an 8-lane highway kind of thing. That's where policy is made through decisions on grant programs. So that's, you know, I think that's just we wanted to give that background because it's helpful to understand where and in what areas the secretary actually does have the ability to change things.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, Pete. And, you know, what was really interesting is just how much he was talking about multimodal transportation, and not just him, but all of the, most of the committee members were bringing in other modes of transportation, talking about transit as you know, a key part of the stimulus, right? And of course, sustainability came in a lot, and accelerating EV adoption and electric vehicle adoption. And, you know, this is obviously very important, being that transportation is the number one contributor to greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S. And there's a big opportunity to look at ways to reduce those emissions. That includes, you know, increasing electric vehicle adoption and, you know, accelerating investment in that domestically and accelerating the build out of charging infrastructure in the U.S., which is obviously going to create new jobs and local jobs in the communities where those are being built. What's also interesting, though, is, you know, it's not just about accelerating EV adoption. It's also about looking at encouraging those alternative modes we've been talking about, cycling, transit, of course, walking, even, you know, micromobility didn't come up, of course, during this hearing. But I think that we're going to see sort of that wide-ranging approach to looking at those issues.
And one other thing that's also, I think, helpful to understand is that, you know, the Commerce Committee gets jurisdiction for the nominee confirmation process for the Secretary of Transportation. But the Commerce Committee has many facets of transportation, but it's not, you know, that's not, this is not the lead committee on transit usage, or, you know, EPW is where that bike ped stuff's going to come. So, you know, that's why it was almost, I would say, enlightening to, or, you know, it was great to see that there was so much emphasis on these things. Cause, you know, the Commerce Department focuses heavily on, or Commerce Committee focuses heavily on, like, trucking and, you know, and the rail section on this. And so it was greener than you would think coming from that committee of jurisdiction. And so again, a really good thing to see.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, maybe we can have in a future episode, we can sort of break down committees, folks, help them understand some of this. But it is really interesting because with the Senate Commerce Committee, you know, a lot of those things, you know, are sort of regulatory. And Senate Environment Public Works Committee, as Pete was explaining, you know, sort of looks at how that money is distributed to states and how those discretionary grant programs are funded, how those decisions are made. But of course, you know, there's also the real power of the purse, which happens in the Senate Appropriations Committee. I feel like we should actually create an infographic to help some folks understand, and maybe it might even help sharpen our awareness too a little bit. You know, one other interesting thing that of course came up was autonomous vehicles. You know, Mayor Pete had mentioned it actually in his written testimony, which he sent to the committee beforehand, and he talked about the opportunity for AVs to increase safety, reduce emissions, improve transportation access, and a lot of the other things we've been talking about on this podcast. And he was really, he sounded very positive on the technology, which, you know, was heartening, I think, to see. And one of the things that he mentioned, too, was, you know, making sure that the U.S. continues to be a leader in this and other technologies. Hyperloop was mentioned as well, but we're going to skip that, I think, for this episode.
He answered the AV question in response to Michigan Senator Peters. You know, obviously Michigan very involved on all things, you know, electrification, autonomy, all of these things. I was curious to see what he was going to say, and his response was, "I'm enthusiastic about the opportunity and for America to lead the way."
Yeah,
and full stop. And it was, you know, and especially knowing his work at the U.S. Conference of Mayors as the, you know, chairing the task force on automation, he gets the that there are, you know, other impacts that will need to be addressed, but that it's not a yes no answer, and so it is. It was good. I think good to see that it wasn't a. I've been told that this is a yeah. We're going to slow this down significantly, but also knowing it's not a just throw gasoline on a fire and let's just go. So I'm very excited about their approach and to see where it's coming.
I agree. And, you know, this is a really exciting time, you know, in autonomous vehicle technology. We've been, you know, we're watching really the technology maturing, reaching more of the roads. Some companies, for example, are, you know, doing deliveries of groceries today, for example. But one thing that is sort of going to be a holdover, the Trump administration was finalizing a rule on occupantless vehicles, so vehicles that won't have anyone inside of it, and trying to you know, modernize regulations so you don't have to have certain things within a vehicle that are meant for humans that are controlling for when humans are controlling the vehicle. And I thought it was interesting that Senator Fisher from Nebraska also asked him about that because due to a little quirk that's not going to be finalized unless he chooses to put it forward. And his quote here on AVs was, automated vehicle technology is coming. It's advancing very quickly. It holds a chance, it holds the potential to be transformative. And in many ways, policy is not kept up. You know, he's very clear. And I think, looking at, where those sorts of obstacles lie. And I think that, you know, as someone who's very hands-on and who seems to be pretty wonky, it seems like, in his conversations with senators before this, he got really deep in the weeds, on some of their questions. And I think that's going to be, interesting to watch, not just on AVs, but, you know, really across the board.
I have not had a chance to watch the hearing, guilty as charged. But I know you two did. Did anything come up around aerial mobility? I'm just curious, or anything around aerial drones?
I don't remember. There was a lot on aviation, you know, because you have a lot of, you know, Senator Cantwell from Washington and a number of folks on the safety side related to, you know, the fallout from the 737 MAX. I don't know that there was a drone call out, even in the Net Council / Hyperloop conversation that was raised.
There was a brief exchange around drones. The key theme was sort of around, you know, local control of your airspace and concerns around privacy from people who are flying drones over your house. So there's certainly you know, senators who are concerned about that, and that's been a hot topic, you know, in the past several years for sure.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be interesting how Mayor Pete, you know, again the theme I brought up earlier is how do you navigate this traditional system with a system that is craving to advance and revolutionize itself. It's just going to be interesting to see if there is a top opportunity to talk about a more holistic transportation system. You know, we're throwing around the words integrated, seamless, carefree. You know, is that possible? And then it is inspiring to have someone that's wonky like Mayor Pete coming in, like we're talking about today, to maybe realize or help put some policies and programs in place to help realize that. I know we talked about in the past about programs that have brought about change, you know, programs like transit oriented development. And now we're, you know, seeing some of the benefits of that from a shared mobility and transit perspective. I'm curious to see if maybe there's another program like that that can help bring together policies, you know, that are focused on next generation mobility solutions and to try and think about how do we create a better system that meets our mobility needs and caters to people. And I think that's, you know, one thing that, you know, was brought up, at least in his opening statement, is the focus on social justice and equity, which I think is going to be something that resonates throughout the Biden administration. We saw the executive order go in place, focus on equity. Section 6.6 of that executive order talks about allocating federal resources to advance fairness and opportunity. So I'm really curious to see how this all fits in within the programs and policies that are put in place, and then how we think about these issues within the innovation and technology context, where there has been some pushback on the equity side.
And I will say that is a different kind of transportation equity than the transportation equity that Senator Sullivan from Alaska raised when he said that Mayor Pete is, you know, you've raised that. I've never heard that before. When I think transportation equity, it's that Alaska is a lot bigger than Indiana and you guys have a lot more roads than us. So this is the more traditional transportation equity as we've known, correct?
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, for for anyone who's listening, I encourage you, if you haven't listened to our episode with Hamdi Greenidge from last year on transportation equity and some of the questions that, you know, bubbled up in 2020, I really encourage you to check that one out. I think that was a good discussion that where we certainly learned a lot, I think, as well.
Yeah. And just to put it out there again, I mean, I think, you know, when we talked before the new year, we were, you know, thinking about what would be the next challenge that USDOT could do, you know, to follow up on the Smart Cities Challenge,
right.
You know, for Mayor Pete's folks and, you know, anybody listening, I think an equity challenge would be fantastic.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, there's so many questions to tackle, right? It's access to jobs. It's access to fresh groceries if you're living in a food desert. Now we're seeing that, I saw a story recently about, you know, pharmacy deserts, people having trouble accessing, you know, prescriptions. And, you know, this isn't just out in rural areas. This is in Chicago. Many people just don't have access to the prescriptions they need to live. So, you know, all these sorts of questions, I hope that we're sort of baking in. And, you know, on that note, too, also think about, you know, the silver wave, seniors who are choosing to age in place, making sure that, you know, they still have the options to, you know, get out and access groceries, prescriptions, and also to enjoy the benefits of, you know, a social life. You know, there are lots of ways to achieve those ends. I think those are also things that are very, to your point, Craig, very well suited for, you know, sort of challenges using discretionary grant funds where the community chooses how they want to help meet those goals, whether it's through transit, whether it's through automation, whether it's through building an active transportation infrastructure. There's just such a huge opportunity here to really empower local and state governments to solve some of these problems.
Yeah, and one last thing, but then I want to actually, I think this is a great pivot to start talking about some of the names from our appointees. But one last thing that was also brought up by many folks is the dire state of the transit industry, but also motor coach. You know, I think it was Senator Blumenthal from Connecticut talked about, you know, Metro North and just that we are really at a dire, you know, existential crisis facing the industry because not only just getting through this, but then trying to get folks back on. So that was definitely also something that was raised and you know, Secretary to be Pete clearly gets that. On that, I do want to pivot, you know, in terms of both what would be a great challenge. You know, I also think let's look at a lot of the names that came out today for nominations at DOT. Obviously, we have Pete Buttigieg as secretary, Polly Trottenberg from New York City DOT at deputy secretary. But then a whole list of names came out. And so I just want to flag kind of a couple that I think were really, really exciting. You know, so we have for FTA is going to be Nuria Fernandez from VTA in Santa Clara, California, which I think will be a fascinating background who, you know, describes herself as an innovation evangelist, you know, the transit agency just outside of or within Silicon Valley, but also a seasoned pro in the industry, I think will bring an interesting, a great perspective on this at a time of a lot of change, both for electrification and new technologies and models. Another fascinating one that's I think going to be relevant to a lot of our listeners is who they're looking at or who they've now announced for NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. That's where, you know, these rulemakings on federal motor vehicle safety standards for autonomous vehicles will be coming out of. You know, their picks. So to be the person who will be running is going to be Steve Cliff, who is from the California Air Resources Board. And then the chief counsel for NHTSA is going to be Ann Carlson, who is at the UCLA Climate Law Center and was a professor. So from that, they're telling me that the kind of auto tech and auto kind of, you know, electrification, you know, or not electric, but auto, the AV side of this is going to be less of the focus and the reducing vehicle emissions through, you know, and redoing CAFE standards is going to be the real focus of NHTSA out the gates. Greg, do you have you guys have thoughts on any of those names?
Yeah, I mean, you know, personnel is policy, is a saying in Washington, right? And the people that you choose as your politicals, we call them, you know, those are the ones who sort of helped set that agenda, as you were saying, Pete. And You know, I think it's really important, especially when we're looking at NHTSA, to first of all, roll back fuel economy, or rather undo the rollback of the fuel economy standards that the Trump administration put in place. You know, if we really want to achieve meaningful reductions in greenhouse gas emissions from transportation, the best place to start is improving fuel economy standards. This was, you know, this was kicked off really, I mean, this current program was kicked off by Bush and then Obama really put it in place. And it's helps. It not only has reduced emissions when you improve fuel economy, but it also improves affordability of transportation for people who don't have an option but to drive. So I'm excited for the opportunities there. One thing that I hope that they focus on in this next rewrite of the fuel economy standards, which is coming up in the next few years, is really rethinking how we design our fuel economy regulations. This is going to get a little in the weeds, but around SUVs and light trucks, you know, the SUVs and light trucks, the ones that are being bought the most by American consumers, 3 out of 4 vehicles that are being bought today are SUVs or trucks, pickup trucks, that is. And that's contributing to really a problem in terms of space in urban and suburban areas. But it's also contributing to emissions and higher pedestrian fatalities. So, you know, I hope this NHTSA is focused equally on safety, emissions, and innovation. But I think that you're right. It does mark a real point when there's going to be a lot of focus on the environment. But just one more thing on that, too. You know, the folks, they're the political folks and they're career folks, people who are civil servants who stay there regardless of which administration is in, if they choose to stay. And a lot of those folks have been working on autonomous vehicles and connected vehicles and other technologies who are, you know, the scientists and the technical folks are probably still going to be there, right? They're generally probably going to stick around. And so that expertise won't leave. I don't think that it means that they can't chew gum and walk at the same time. But it certainly will color some of the priorities that are, you know, put at the top of the list for this administration.
Yeah, no, that is very true. I mean, that is going to be, that's the most where DOT can literally, with, you know, with EPA, but change the actual course as opposed to it's being a nudge or an incentivizing states to do projects that nudge. So that, you know, that is going to be huge and. You know, is kind of one of the most direct environmental consequences of an election. So we're looking forward to that. A couple other really interesting names on the that I think goes back to the smart growth and all of those policies and how important they are. Personnel is policy. There was a great pick that I liked in the Secretary's policy shop. Who's going to be. I believe the acting assistant secretary for policy, and that's Christopher Coase, who is with Smart Growth America in their LOCUS initiative that is really focused on, you know, smart development, smart real estate and growth, and bringing in the real estate industry and the developers and all of that, along with planners and cities and kind of helping to really foster the actual, okay, no, let's really do this project and really incentivizing it and quantifying it. I'm really excited, Christopher. I've known for a while from an early campaign work together, and that is a really, again, just a really exciting indication of the direction that this administration wants to go. Also in the policy shop is going to be Robin Hutchison, who comes from running the Minneapolis, Minnesota Department of Public Works, who we've talked about in the past. We had Danielle Elkins from her team on. And they have been doing some of the most amazing forward-leaning, you know, all these great projects, but just, you know, not getting any attention for it. So she, that's another one that I'm excited for. And again, having all of these folks together, moving policy and crafting these initiatives, you know, it's great to see these backgrounds. There's also, we have someone coming in from the micromobility world, Maurice Henderson, who's at Bird, is going to be there. He's going to be a senior advisor to the secretary. And it's, you know, it's very exciting. And I could go through a whole bunch of these names. Vin White, who's going to be a senior advisor coming from, you know, former DOT, but also, is currently working with the governor in New Jersey. So he's going to be very focused on some of those early efforts, but also, you know, that is someone who gets the Gateway Project, which, you know, I think Stacey Abrams should basically get that tunnel should be named after her, because now with Chuck Schumer is going to get that Gateway Project, now that's majority leader. So, there's a lot more and we're very excited, by what we're seeing, from a personnel standpoint.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, back to, you know, Polly Trottenberg, as number two at DOT, I think, it's really exciting that she's there as well, because, she has that really wonky experience at the federal level, but also, you know, running New York City Department of Transportation, the most dense city in the United States, right? And having that expertise in how to move people more quickly. And also, you know, Polly's really been a leader on Vision Zero, on helping to reduce bike and pedestrian deaths, and is was really passionate about that. So I'm really excited to see what comes out of this DOT.
Agreed. No, it's I'm excited. It's, you know, and what's been interesting and something you'll note when you're seeing a lot of nominees being named as deputies, and there's been some kind of confusion. This is a intentional effort by the transition team and now the Biden administration to get their folks in and get them on the job day one, because it can take into the summer to get all of, you know, your modal administrators and everybody that requires a Senate confirmation process, like Mayor Pete is going through now, that can drag on forever. And unless you are already in there in another role, you can't actually show up and start working until you've been confirmed. And so by nominating folks as deputy administrator at something, which doesn't require a Senate confirmation, they're able to go in and then serve as an acting administrator while they can then do the nomination process. So it's actually very smart. It shows a real focus on how serious and urgent the challenges and everything facing the administration are right now, and that we need to get to work day one.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And on that note, you know, I think that, you know, looking forward to what's next in terms of confirmations, at the end of the hearing for Mayor Pete, they asked for questions for record back today for the initiated. That's basically the senators can send a nominee questions. They have to answer them within a certain amount of time in sort of written format if it wasn't time to ask it orally. They asked for a pretty quick turnaround. They asked for his answers by next Tuesday. So that combined with, you know, the bipartisan support we've seen from Mayor Pete, means that theoretically, this is the Senate we're talking about. We could see, Mayor Pete confirmed, you know, possibly before the end of the month or in the next month. But, we're not in the prediction business here, but just saying what is possible here. Do you guys have anything else to add before we wrap up here? Anything that you're looking forward to, excited about?
I will give one shout out to Doug on Senator Klobuchar's staff, who subtly slid her a note to let her know that she had a piece of hair sticking up and that she fixed, and then called Doug out on, which was a very funny part of the hearing. And also my other favorite kind of silly side note was multiple senators all trying to, through, you know, whether they grew up in their state or they went to college or worked there once, were all trying to lay claim to Chasten. So I think we joke about this, and we are, as we said, we are very excited to have Team Pete and the Pete train group joining us and hopefully subscribing and spreading the word amongst Team Pete about the Mobility Podcast. But we are actually going to have a mini celebrity transportation secretary.
Yeah.
And first family of transportation. So it's exciting. And I there's a lot of optimism going into this year.
And I just want to say I've really, really loved the creativity of Team Pete. One of my favorite hashtags I've seen so far is hashtag chast in your seatbelt. That's a particularly good one. There's hashtag learn about DOT and, you know, sign me up for that. Love that. And you know, on that note, we'll be recording a lot more episodes in the coming weeks and months, helping to serve that purpose of learning about DOT and talking to folks who have lived and breathed it and who are currently living and breathing it, and helping everyone to jump into the waters for transportation policy.
Yeah, and for Greg Rogers' grade A transportation puns.
Well, thank you. There'll be more to come on that front. So, guys, where can folks find you online if they want to see your rantings and ravings about transportation policy?
This is Greg Rodriguez. I'm at Smarter Transpo on the Twitter.
And this is Pete Gould. It's at Pete_Gould.
Great.
On Twitter.
Awesome. And I am at AV Gregar on Twitter and on all platforms. You can also follow the Mobility Podcast at Mobility Podcast. Check out our website. You can also sign up for our newsletter at mobilitypodcast.com. Thanks everyone for tuning in.
And wear a mask.
Be safe.
Thanks everyone.
Night.